No, I imagine there aren't too many J.D. Salingers in the world.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Though, Truman Capote always struck me as kind of an asshole.
Who knows? Anyway, welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight it's Mark and it's Ian. We're talking
with the Philip Hoff Seymour. Can't really.
PSH?
The PSH. That's clever.
Right. I'm coming up with nicknames for all those people so that when I go down and work with them, I immediately
just
start
slap them on the back. Hey, PSH.
Hey, psh. Come here. Psh. Now.
My name's not Pete.
Right.
It is now.
Your name's what I tell you it is. Quit your crying.
Yeah, that'd be such a... You know, I'm sure there are people, you know, like...
Jack wagons, yeah.
Jack wagons. No, I was just thinking people that could just... They could get away with a certain amount of just assholery, and there's nothing anybody could do about it.
Right. Okay, so tonight we're talking about the remake Halloween by Rob Zombie, written and directed by him. When was this coming out? Like 2008 or something? 2009?
Yeah, like 2007.
Okay. They used some of the same music as the John Carpenter stuff, but they used some different music. I didn't see the original. I've not seen the original. I know it's a big no-no. It's worse than not seeing Casablanca or something, but which I also haven't. But
you know, you're not really into the horror genre. I was shocked
really,
when you told
me
to bring that over.
Well, you kept saying you wanted to watch it, so I was like, dude, this is going to be the last ones, so we gotta go out
in
style.
You seemed to enjoy it. I was surprised.
I had fun with it. I hadn't seen a movie like that in a while, so I was like, able to have fun with it.
You really seem to enjoy the foresight of it.
Foresight is always good. Basically, I came up with the scenario where it's
so
like...
So now you have to see Devil Re-
after
Devil's
he,
Rejects.
After he got fired by Walmack in the Rock for letting Mason go,
there's a timeline there because then you have the Devil's Rejects, and so he goes from FBI to sheriff.
Right.
And then he goes from sheriff...
To piece of shit.
To piece of shit.
Right, yeah. The stripper somehow puts up with. Guess she needs a father figure for the kids, but that's not the greatest one to pick.
Maybe she just can't bear...
That whole thing is very, very inexplicable in the beginning. It's just... It's true. It's a broken home.
I've seen that. But it's not
particularly abusive, you know what I mean? That's the weird thing.
He's crippled at that
point. Right, I guess. But his mother is good to him.
Well, he starts going off about the Michelle.
Yeah, right. Right. Michelle.
I think he has more than enough potential to be abusive if
of
he
course.
Wasn't crippled.
Yeah, right. I mean, but they do kind of like downplay that to a little. They play a little of that, but it's more
you
like
know, it's almost,
with the perfect storm
of psychosis.
I don't know
how much shit you've really seen.
Right.
I mean, I witnessed so much of dysfunctional, just beyond dysfunctional crap that I can't imagine seeing anything that would shock me in that way because I've seen just beyond bizarre shit. And I remember this one happy little family unit I dealt with one time where I kept walking by and I hear this dude screaming that he's going to punch her in the face just over and over. I'm going to punch you in the fucking face. And so I, you know, calmly knock on the door, you know, things cool. Oh, he was just talking. This is actually what the chick told me. He was talking to his mother on the phone, and I'm just kind of like, well, he needs to hang up, or I have to call the cops.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what you
he
want
needs to talk
say.
Quieter.
So then
the
he comes up, but he starts with all his crap, and you can imagine that. And she's, like, blocking him from me in the doorway. And I mean, that's not even the most bizarre thing I could tell you about. It was funny that when I was talking to the class tonight, and they were like, they couldn't believe, and I didn't even tackle, you know, a smidgen of the stories I've gotten from being out on the road for a year. But, you know, just going back to that experience, I just, so much weird shit.
Right.
And just beyond dysfunctional, crazy people. And they have children, and the children get abused, and you know.
Exactly.
And now you see, I'm actually leading into the story, and I always wondered, and I was really, and honestly, during that period of my life, I was drinking a lot, and all that kind of shit really did affect me in a negative way. It changed the way I think. And it changed me politically, actually, the years I spent dealing with that. And
kind of like an accelerated growing up phase.
Accelerated growing up phase, I guess. I definitely played, it definitely stung my idealism a great deal. And it certainly, as horrible as it sounds, it made me a lot less eager for, you know, whatever reasons. A lot less eager to help people in need. And, but we're talking about the interesting thing. Well, you haven't seen the original, and this, the remake, delves into the childhood
of Michael Myers. Right, I would imagine so.
And all of that in the original, the movie starts out.
Yeah, I've seen the first like 20 minutes of the original. So I mean, basically, he's old and psycho killer much faster in the original. Like it's
right,
like,
in the original, he kills his sister. In fact, that's it. He just kills his sister. The boyfriend leaves.
Right.
And he gets his parents come home as he's walking outside.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, he's younger. He's like. What was it? So,
like 6 or 7 or something?
Yeah, he's like 6. I think it was supposed to be 1963, and he was like 6. And then, yeah, and then he goes away for 15 years, and he comes back, and he's 21 in 78. And,
buys a 6-pack and starts murdering again.
Pretty much. And there's a big lapse. You don't see any of, really, you only get... You get a window into his treatment just from listening to...
Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance's character talking. Yeah. Basically the same crap that Malcolm McDowell's talking about with his book about...
The Devil's Eyes and the Perfect Storm of Psychosis.
And and you know what's interesting? In the first movie, you never know why he's going after... Laurie Strode. That I don't even think it was part of the plot. I think they came up with that idea for the second movie.
Right.
But she was never his sister. There was never any mention that there was another child.
It was just a slasher movie needed to go after. He had a fixation with this particular woman for some reason, and whatever reason, it didn't matter.
Yeah, you know, there was some similar things where... Like, there were a lot of scenes that were that had been recreated, and one of them was, when the girls are walking home from school, if there's a similar scene where somebody sees him or they start mocking him or yelling at him, and that could have been what triggered it, why he goes after them.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, there were definitely some differences. And, of course, the mythology of the whole thing has come such a long way. I mean, that one was the... let's see. So, 6, 7, 8. That'd be the 9th one, I believe.
The remake?
Yeah, the 9th Halloween movie. And, of course, 3 had absolutely nothing to do with Michael Myers.
Right. Night of the Witch or whatever.
Season of the Witch. Yeah, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And then that didn't do so well, so they brought Michael Myers back
in
4 because he...
Originally,
the second he gets shot a million fucking times.
Right.
And he blows up on top of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, along with Donald Pleasance, so they're dead.
Right.
But they survived miraculously. A whole room full of ether in a hospital blowing up.
Hmm.
And not only that, he got shot in the head. Well, he'd already been shot, like in the first one. He already got shot 6 times. I mean, that was a difference. Donald Pleasance, man, unlike that stupid-ass cop, when he found Michael Myers, man, he unloaded on him. It was the thing to do.
So in this remake, they've changed a few things. They've done more to focus on the psychology of the kid, and they did more to kind of female empower the Laurie character, have her be the one that pulls the trigger at the last the end.
Rob Zombie was talking about in the original, Laurie was such a she was like a librarian,
right? Yeah,
and he's like, I mean. If you portrayed her that way today, she'd seem Amish.
Right, yeah.
And that scene in the beginning when she's first with introduced.
The bagel. Right,
with
yeah.
the bagel and all that. And he was talking, he took some crap from people about including that in the movie, and he basically what he wanted to do...
Sure, she's not that nice a girl, but she's nicer compared to the other ones.
Well, right? that she's a teenage girl that's not... You know, she's not... Well, it's kind of like, he was talking about, they get pretty graphic in the bathroom.
Right.
In the beginning, sister, stomach full of cum, and the kids taunting Michael. Right. And he's like, he's talking about all this stuff, and he's like, when I went to school, I remember kids talking like that. I mean, they just try to come up with the most obscene, disgusting things they could think of. And, when I think back,
it doesn't sound very clever for a movie writing, but that's what the way kids were, They're not very clever. They're just gross.
And, absolutely. And, it rings true. And then, it's like the whole family dynamic at the beginning is so over the top. And it's just so dysfunctional. And I'm like... It doesn't seem unrealistic to me because I've seen that shit. I've seen worse.
Right.
And
plus, it's also a horror movie, so lack of realism isn't entirely that big a deal.
No, they definitely this was the director's cut too, and there was a lot of things like the rape scene that wasn't in the theatrical cut, and he. Talked about that, he just kind of threw it in because I think otherwise Courtney Gaines' character was like cut out completely, but he never really felt those quite right, that it just was too much.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
but yeah, there were a number of things.
I mean, I like the stuff, I think the way I feel about this movie is I kind of like, I'm not a huge horror guy, but I didn't mind some of the way things kind of unfolded plot-wise for the slashing stuff at the end. I didn't have a real problem necessarily with it, but I was more interested in sort of the psychology of the genesis of the psychotic kid thing in the first part. So I don't know, that part was compelling to me and interesting for a bit, though I did kind of become a bit inexplicable. It's like, oh, he just keeps making masks, and it's almost like, well, what's the deal? If he had just gone to live with a nice family, would he have been okay? Or was it because he was incarcerated that and couldn't go home and didn't get, well, why can't I go home? I don't understand. You did something really bad. I mean, whether you were aware of it or not, like, you never really got... It was weird.
There was never any remorse.
But there was also, like, a weird disconnect, too. And I mean, the way the kid... played it early on too, it was almost like, where's he at? Like, why did he do this or do that? It's like, it's almost like, I think they could have gone into that a little more.
Well, the kid obviously snapped, whatever few strands were holding them together.
Yeah, I don't know if he snapped so much as if he just was looking at that as like a solution and not realizing like the, when you're a little kid, you don't get like, there are consequences that are more than just you can't have dinner that night, kind of go to your room. It's like...
Well, he was like 10, 11?
Yeah, I know. And they made him a little older, I think, than I would have liked for the kinds of ways for him to behave. It's like...
Well, but he had gone past.
Right, yeah.
They talked about he had already gone into
the animal killing and stuff, yeah.
And, he was the... Jeffrey Dahmer kind of thing.
Yeah. And so I guess the whole point was it was really just sort of saying, well, maybe some people just are going to do that, I guess. I don't know. His mother seemed like she was really caring for him, but at the same time...
But then again, he never killed his mother.
His mother had a certain kind of profession that kind of made it difficult for a young boy growing up and everything and his father, whether that was his father or not.
His father was in heaven.
His father was... Well, yeah, I guess.
Possibly.
Right. And
William Forsythe, I don't think, was anybody's dad.
Right.
The baby. I certainly hope not.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the interesting thing. And I was almost, this is really a horrible way to look at it. But, it all came apart in the end, unfortunately. But if Michael had been incarcerated the rest of his life until he died, I mean, she would have had a fairly normal life, and her circumstances worked out better than anybody could have hoped because of Sherry Moon Zombie's character committing suicide and, you know, the sheriff, Sheriff Brackett, dropping the kid off.
For the daughter, yeah.
Yeah,
the
little girl, I mean, maybe. She turned out normal when she was in a happy, loving family.
Right, and, yeah.
And if that whole hadn't happened, I'm sure she would have gone on to live a normal, happy life.
That's true, possibly. I mean, who knows?
I mean, you really couldn't come up with a better circumstance for her, considering the situation.
Right.
Not to mention the stigma attached in which the sheriff was trying to protect her
against. Right, right. No, I mean...
Because that'll haunt you the rest of your life.
Right.
Especially in a small town.
Right, you just get out of a small town at that
point. And certain things are just better not to know. You're better off not knowing. I think it takes a lot of people a long time to figure that out. It's better just to leave things alone than to go digging. I mean, you go digging a lot of times. I've experienced that with my own family. There are certainly a lot of things that I've learned over the years about various elements of my family that I probably would have been happier not knowing.
Remember that episode of Saved by the Bell where Jesse found out that her great ancestors were slave owners?
Is that why she became a stripper?
She found out that they were like slave traders.
And she
apologized to Lisa, and Lisa's like, "Hey, it's okay." Right, that happened in an episode of Saved by the Bell. That's right.
I Saved by the Bell.
Or the episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation where Jean-Luc found out that one of his French ancestors was like a terrible, like, treated the Native Americans really badly or something. Yep. You look back far enough.
Saved by the Bell, I don't think I was quite at the age where I totally appreciated Saved by the Bell. I mean...
Appreciated? Were you there in time for California Dreams, though?
I would watch it a little bit for the TNA, because even at that age, I was still interested.
When you weren't killing animals, then...
Yeah. I wasn't killing animals. No, I was digging... The whole
digging for
Tiffany,
fire.
Amber Thiessen, and all that, and but it was just, even when I was like 7 or 8 or whatever, 9, it was so awful that it didn't entertain me.
Right. Yeah, we didn't have much choice.
I remember California Dreams that came on like Saturday mornings, didn't it?
Right. So it was Saved by the Bell.
And yeah, I couldn't handle that one either. But I did. I did go through a phase where I was into, like, the Kids Incorporated and crap like that.
KIDS.
But then I was really young.
Right.
I didn't know any better.
Right. It happens.
It happens.
I mean, and you don't have a lot of choice sometimes. You know, this is before the internet and everything and Netflix and all that. So you just had whatever channels had cartoons on or not cartoons, and they decide they're going to show Saved by the Bell instead of cartoons. I remember one time...
I know. That was pissed.
I was watching Saved by the Bell one Saturday.
It seemed like he was going... I know. It was like a... There was like a phase where they were weeding out the cartoons for that crap.
They were. And I remember watching it one day, because I'd kind of at that point kind of inured myself to the fact, like, this is, I guess, what's on at 10 now instead of cartoons. You get one less hour
at 10. I was kind of phasing out.
Well, to a degree, but
I'd get up at 6.
Oh, geez, wow. I'd get up early back when it was a lot of cartoons.
And I always wanted Apple Jacks, and I never had them.
That's too bad.
And then I finally had them, and I didn't like them.
Right. But see, we had all these things to deal with, all these struggles to go through as children. We didn't turn into Michael Myers, so I mean, it's definitely a back and forth.
No, I always call it my Opie Taylor story.
Right.
Where, used to go shooting squirrels when I was a kid, not that young, but like 11, 12, and I had an epiphany that if I was laying on a log, I wouldn't want some big being to come along and smite me, smote me, shoot me in the back, and I stopped doing it. I don't think every child figures that one out, but it was kind of profound for me.
Right.
And it also, I read a story, the last Stephen King book was kind of along those themes. It was an idea he came up with like over 30 years ago, but the story was too broad and he had to do too much research, and it was just, it kind of collapsed under
his own overwrought weight.
Right, and so he shelved the story.
Until he had a better sense
of it. And now he has a lot more, he had the resources and just wanted to finally finish it. And it was called The Dome. And it was really great. It was kind of, it was going back to, the days of It and The Stand. And it was just this huge epic story. It was over 1,000 pages, and it was great. But the whole idea was the idea of children burning ants with magnifying glass. And then... what if we were the ants?
Right, yeah.
That idea. And, it's such a simple idea, and I think that's where it all came from one day. He was just thinking about it.
Wanton killing of lesser beings for some kind of perverse power
trip. Or just, it really had to do with voyeurism. And, he could really go back to Gamer. For that, and there really is
Chili Dog,
and Chili Dog, and there really is a look at the popularity, the reality TV shows and how that all took off.
Nothing new there, yeah.
People like to watch I have that to a certain extent. One of my favorite things, if I'm in a city for the first time or just in general, and I did this when I was in DC, and I just sat down on the mall, and I was just watching all the tourists, and just watching people, and watching all the business people, and all the various law enforcement agencies, and all the black suburbans and shit. And I just sat, and I took it all in, and I'd listen, and I was just fascinated watching everybody.
All the moving parts.
The moving parts?
Yeah.
Well, I was enjoying watching the ass, too, but... But in a more, lascivious way.
Right.
I was just enjoying watching people, but I don't think I would enjoy. It just depends on how detached you can make yourself. I mean, it's not like there isn't a fascination with violence. Or death, because they're taboo, and they're hopefully, unless you grew up in a really horrible circumstance,
right?
They're not. Hey, Josh.
Hey.
And they're not an everyday occurrence. They're not. You hear about children having to learn about death. Unfortunately, there are. Children that...
Learn earlier than others.
Yeah, learn earlier than others.
No Santa, you're going to die.
There's a... just the human thing, that empathy, where when you don't detach yourself, when you don't take away people's humanity, where you've...
You get burned out on the empathy.
Burned out on the empathy. No, I mean, it's not pleasant to watch...
Right.
Watch people in pain or watch people die or see that kind of
at a certain point in time when you can see
unless you detach yourself.
Right.
I mean, it's like watching a movie. It's not real. But for some people, like Chili Dog, for instance,
right.
There's that that taboo side of things. Where
the line begins to blur when you start doing the reality shows and everything else.
Yeah,
quote
exactly.
Unquote. Yeah, it's interesting violent culture stuff, and I didn't really do that in this movie because it started so early that I don't know if as a remake was it supposed to be contemporary when it was in the present its present day or was it
it was present day.
Someone had a cell phone at one point. Yeah.
Oh, you're not talking about the original. You're
talking
about
the remake.
That was kind of interesting because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
Because he's talking about 17 years, but Rob Zombie never dates the childhood.
Right.
And he never dates the present.
Right.
It's just simply, had
this much time
passed.
Yeah. He was 10, now he's
9. Years later.
Yeah.
But a lot of things don't really fit.
Right.
Because it looks like it's the 70s, but then it looks like it's post-2000.
Right.
There's a lot of years there.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but who cares?
Yeah, I guess.
It's kind of like the sheriff's car, for instance. The sheriff's car is a 98 or newer Crown Victoria.
Right.
Well, that'd be at least 20 years.
Hmm. I know, I got the impression it was like mid 80s in the original part of the movie.
It could be.
I mean, he's got a Kiss shirt on, but that doesn't mean that that's what they're at. That could be leftovers from back in the day, you know?
Right. There isn't really anything specifically that dates it.
No.
But there's like no Walkmans and no VCRs.
I mean, the pubic hair, maybe. You could use that as a date.
The pubic hair?
As sort of an international dateline, yeah.
What pubic hair?
Well, when that one chick gets killed in the present time.
Oh, as being because all chicks would be bare now?
I don't know.
The
I'm
fucking
saying,
Girl Scouts?
There's a, bare, like, there's a sense of it.
Like poor old... Oh, shit. What the fuck is his name? I keep thinking Ray Liotta, but...
Not Ray Liotta.
Robert Loggia.
Right, yeah.
Like Robert Loggia, when he gets out of the can.
Uh-huh.
And he goes down to the bang.
Uh-huh.
It's like the goddamn Girl Scouts out there.
Right, yeah. Oh, Robert Loggia.
That would be a culture shock, you know?
That would be.
Things have changed a lot.
Things have changed. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't mind the movie. I don't know if it felt long to me or not. We watched it the middle of the day.
One quick question. This is really important.
Right.
I mean, this from this moment on, the podcast is moving in one direction or the other. Landing strip or without landing strip?
What?
You know, like I grew up as a child, and you know, the first.
You know, I'm going to answer that question with a question that's not a question, and basically say, you know. Like so many other things, it really depends on the person, and it really depends on the context and the situation.
That's a comment.
And I mean, that's a, well, it is, but it isn't, because
so
it's the truth.
Of going
it's
right or left, we're going down.
Right. Sometimes that's what you have to do.
Sometimes you just gotta go splat. Huh?
Right.
Okay.
Sometimes you gotta go down.
That's fine. You
right.
You cop out.
Okay.
That's cool.
Fine. We'll call it that. So yeah, I think I'd give this a 3 out of 5. Because it was
three out of five.
It does everything. It does pretty well. It doesn't have. He doesn't do anything too crazy with the camera. It all kind of fits. The behavior of the characters is kind of decent.
I'm right about this, so it doesn't really matter if you do look at him.
Oh, about the girl? Yeah. You know what? I actually don't care anymore.
Because she was.
I believe
she was
you
in the fourth and the fifth one.
Okay.
Yeah, that, I was going to explain that as kind of a weird little thing.
Right.
He purposefully didn't want to cast anybody that had been involved in any of the previous Halloweens.
I could see that, yeah.
And but Scout,
right,
plays Laurie Strode,
mm-hmm.
who was Jamie Lee Curtis's character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Daniel Harris plays Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter,
right,
in the fourth and the fifth one. So technically.
It's the same actress.
So technically, Daniel Harris is
was in the existing continuity. Yeah.
If you go through the whole mythology, but people.
No, where does Busta fit into this?
Busta was just a fleck.
A sad, misunderstood kind of situation for him. Huh?
Yeah, him and not Vanessa Williams. Was that Vivica? Was that?
I don't know. I didn't saw the CH2O.
Was that Beyonce? Who the fuck was in? That wasn't HTO. That was the next one.
Oh my gosh!
It was.
Jesus Christ!
Halloween. It was the Halloween Masters of the Universe.
Masters of the Universe, right?
What was it?
Right. Did Gryldor show up at some point?
Wouldn't it be awesome if...
If they combined Masters of the Universe with Halloween?
If I made a movie, it would just be so... It would be for me.
Right, right.
It would be for me.
They all
should
be.
Somebody enjoyed it,
right.
You know, all the better, but it'd be for me.
But you trick a bunch of people to give you millions of dollars to make your own movie.
Millions of dollars just to make a pile of just my random thoughts.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people probably wouldn't find it funny, and I'd care less.
Right.
But I would find it funny.
Right. Okay, so I give 3 out of 5. For
you gave it 3 out of 5, and that.
What do you give it?
4.
Mark liked the remake.
I was so like so many remakes, especially like a horror remake, yeah. There really haven't been that many great.
The general scuttlebutt was that, I mean, a lot of people that really liked the original were like, you know what, there's nothing particularly wrong with this. It does all right. It does some different things.
I thought he did a great job. I was really happy with it.
Right.
And of course, then the cash grab came and. But that's one of the things that I liked about Zombie is it's like he totally admitted it. And, you know, it's like, yeah,
cash grab.
Yeah.
Has he done anything since that?
Not that I'm aware of. I'd be kind of curious to look up what kind of projects he's got going. I was wondering, when's the next James Bond coming out?
Well, they didn't have any money for a while there, and so they weren't going to do one until they had a until the economy got better.
There were so many
different
studios linked with that thing. Is like Columbia and like 20th Century Fox, and
but we'll see, man.
Owned by Sony Pictures now.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Who knows? Okay, so that was Halloween.
They made money, didn't they?
I think so.